And we are not afraid of further verifications. We need nuclear science and nuclear energy, and our enemies will never provide for our needs in this field. They may wish to see us humiliated, but we will stand firm with dignity.
Pezeshkian says Iran will engage in nuclear talks with dignity and defend its right to a peaceful nuclear program. He said that targeted assassinations of Iran's leading nuclear scientists have just strengthened the country's determination to make progress. The president added that today's nuclear advancements have fostered independence in different sectors, including in medical science, which has reduced reliance on the treatment outside the country. The president made a comment in ceremony introducing the latest achievements of Iran's nuclear program on the occasion of the National Day of Nuclear Technology. The head of the Atomic Energy Organization also addressed that ceremony, unveiling key developments within the nation's nuclear industry.
So today, with the help and permission of God, we shall enter the third phase of the development of Iran's nuclear industry. Of course, we began these activities 10 years ago. This is not something we are starting today, but rather, today we are entering an industrial phase. This third phase is the golden and primary phase that empowers and strengthens the country into which we have now entered.
Mohammad Islami highlighted achievements in producing nearly 70 radiopharmaceuticals and advancing 20 others in clinical trials. He emphasized three of the medications have completed trials and inaugurated by the president. Islami also revealed plans to boost electricity generation to 3,000 megawatts using nuclear energy. He praised the resilience of experts in making progress despite external challenges. Islami said that over the past 3 years, his organization has achieved around 150 scientific and technological advancements every year. Iran also opened its largest and most sophisticated nuclear medicine center in Tehran ahead of the National Nuclear Technology Day.
A beacon of hope for countless patients, Rasul Akram Hospital in Tehran now hosts Iran's largest and most advanced nuclear medicine center, officially opening its doors with a state-of-the-art department equipped with PET-CT and SPECT imaging systems.
We have opened this new nuclear medicine ward, spanning 600 square meters, which includes the latest PET and SPECT scanners. These advanced tools will significantly improve the diagnosis and treatment of medical conditions, particularly for cancer patients, as the center is now equipped with the most cutting-edge technology available globally.
We have successfully installed advanced scanners in this center, marking a significant step in utilizing radiopharmaceuticals for nuclear medicine. This technology will greatly benefit our patients and enhance their care.
This milestone marks a significant leap in Iran's medical capabilities, seamlessly combining cutting-edge technology with expert care to redefine diagnostic and therapeutic standards.
This new ward was essential for the hospital. As the first such center at Iran University of Medical Sciences, it will significantly contribute to early diagnosis and more effective treatment plans. The ability to visualize both function and anatomy simultaneously greatly enhances the precision of our work.
Meanwhile, with the PET and SPECT scanners in operation and specialists delivering care to patients, concerns about long waiting times have been effectively alleviated.
This cutting-edge technology not only enhances diagnostic precision, but also embodies a commitment to providing the highest quality health care to patients.
The opening comes just before Iran's National Nuclear Technology Day, reflecting the country's increasing reliance on nuclear advancements, particularly in healthcare. Gisumi Shahmadi, Tehran.
Iran's foreign minister says that the upcoming nuclear talks in Oman will serve as a test to gauge U.S.'s seriousness in addressing long-standing tensions. Abbas Sarafshi says that the talks will be a new opportunity for diplomacy with Washington that has a long history of unilateralism. He added that the negotiations will focus on fostering transparency and building trust regarding the peaceful nature of Iran's nuclear program in return for the lifting of U.S. sanctions. Tehran and Washington are set to hold indirect and high-level talks on Iran's nuclear program in Oman on Saturday. Araghchi will reportedly be heading the Iranian team in the meetings, and the U.S. will be represented by Trump's special envoy for Middle East, Steve Witkoff. In other news, Israeli occupation forces continue to perpetrate atrocities in Gaza. The death toll from the Shoja'iya massacre has reached 40 people. At least 8 children were among the victims. 100 other people were also injured. Rescue teams face insurmountable challenges as they're struggling to reach the numerous victims trapped under rubble. The Gaza Health Ministry has issued a grave warning regarding the humanitarian crisis, indicating that around 60,000 children are at risk of severe health consequences due to malnutrition. The Israeli genocide has claimed the lives of more than 50,800 people in Gaza. Resistance movements in Gaza have condemned the massacre committed by the Israeli army in the Shoja'iya neighborhood east of Gaza City. Hamas says that the atrocity will not go unpunished and won't be forgotten. It also called for the exertion of more pressure on both the Israeli regime and the U.S. to lift the blockade and hold the Israeli war criminals accountable for their crimes. The Islamic Jihad also described the massacre as a war crime. It urged the international community to put an end to the atrocities against a vulnerable population. So from Deir al-Bala in Gaza, let's bring in our correspondent, Abu Bakr Abed. Abu Bakr, so tell us about this slaughter that's happening in the Shoja'iya neighborhood. And unfortunately, children, again, are being among the main victims. They're dying of malnutrition. They don't have proper food, water, and also bombs are American-made bombs, especially, are taking their lives, too.
Definitely. When we talk about children, they are the worst sufferers of this Israeli-U.S. genocide, of course, and the vast majority of the injuries that we have here inside the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Hospital or elsewhere in any of Gaza's hospitals, which are right now triaging genocide, they are just to children. Most, the vast majority are children, because Israeli attacks, and because we need to remember that half of Gaza's population is children. So this is 50, this is around 1 million people who are children in Gaza. So when we talk about this attack that has just occurred in the morning on Al-Shija'iya neighborhood, now we have confirmed reports that the death toll has reached 40 Palestinians killed, mostly children and women. And those are children, most of them are under 10 or 12 years old, and many of them are in fact under 5 years old. And there are still, as I told you last time, the rescue efforts are still ongoing to retrieve the missing bodies from under the rubble, or still trapped under the rubble, because this is what will happen when you drop explosive and incendiary bombs, heavy bombs, on a densely populated area. And the fact is that Al-Shija'iya neighborhood is one of the most densely populated neighborhoods in the entire besieged territory. So any attacks on it, and those specific strikes or strikes by the Israeli warplanes, will cause such devastating impact and will cause such utter devastation in those residential squares. This is in addition to the fact that this neighborhood, the Shoja'iya neighborhood in East Gaza City, has been utterly devastated by the Israeli machine during the 15 months of the genocide, the first phase of the genocide. And another toll, the injury toll from this attack has now reached more than 100, around 100 and maybe more than that. And the, imagine what it means right now for those hospitals who are without any basic necessities to treat such a huge, massive influx of injuries inside, with probably some tens of medical beds, some just probably 5 or 6 ICU beds, without monitors, without IV fluids, without medical solutions, without medical devices. They cannot really do X-ray because of the cutting off, because of the electricity blackouts, and because of Israel's ongoing blockade and the severe shortage of supplies. So we are expecting that this death toll will rise, because many of those injuries who have arrived in a very, very critical condition will die from their wounds in the upcoming hour or so, or until tonight. So it's just something very horrifying and unbelievable, because this is what has been happening over the course of the past 2 weeks, because Israel has been closing the two crossings for over 37 days right now, and this has resulted in extreme suffering for the entirety of the population in terms of the medical services, in terms of the other services, the public services like water, electricity, and other things, and food, and everything. Every aspect of life has been shattered by the Israelis during the last 17 days.
Unfortunately, so thank you so much for that live coverage. Abu Bakr Abed, our correspondent there in Gaza's Deir Abella. Now, in continuation of the Israeli policy of using humanitarian supplies as a tool of war against Gazans, the regime also systematically cripples the ability of the NGOs operating there. Aid groups are not able to cope with the immense pressure thanks to the catastrophic humanitarian conditions there. Motiebi Musabbeh has a report from Deir Abella.
Since the onset of the Israeli genocidal war on the Gaza Strip, it has become unambiguous that the Israeli regime uses the humanitarian needs as a tool to blackmail the Palestinian resistance on one hand and collectively punish the entire population on the other. It was not enough for the occupation forces to close Gaza crossings and prevent the flow of the humanitarian supplies. Neither was it enough to ruin all life sectors in Gaza. They proceeded vigorously to narrow the leeway of NGOs to operate.
Since the start of the genocidal war on Gaza, the Israeli regime has been targeting relief workers from international and local organizations deliberately. We have hundreds of those individuals, many of them foreigners, who were killed while helping the Palestinian people. This is a flagrant violation of all international and humanitarian laws, because those workers must be protected. We comprehend that the main aim of these systematic attacks is to deepen the suffering of the Palestinian people in light of the Israeli policy of using the humanitarian conditions as a method of war.
Considering that 2.2 million Palestinians in Gaza, 70% women and children, are utterly relying on those supplies and services provided by international and local NGOs, is enough to paint a tragic picture of the current situation in Gaza. Those organizations that were striving over the past months to secure some amounts of food items to the families torn apart in the displacement camps are no longer able to get even the minimum percentage of the life-saving materials.
The Israeli regime has been tightening its suffocating siege on Gaza by preventing the entry of the humanitarian needs, which not only plunges the people into catastrophic situations, but exposes the ability of humanitarian organizations to respond to the crises. Those organizations have been grappling with Israeli tactics used against them. Nowadays, zero trucks of goods, medical supplies, and fuel are allowed, which means that the organizations will shut their doors soon. The world needs to take decisive actions to stop these crimes against Gazans.
Since the resumption of the genocidal war on Gaza, a plethora of warnings and statements were unleashed by the NGOs, sounding the alarms of them being unable to function in Gaza due to Israeli attacks that claimed hundreds more lives in addition to the prevention of the basic supplies. Having 25 World Food Program-supported bakeries in Gaza shut down could be just the beginning of the absolute famine that will be a recipe of a death sentence for the entire population. With every brutal measure taken against the Gaza Strip, the Israeli regime presents more poignant evidences that it has no red lines when it comes to shattering the lives of the Palestinian people, and it reflects in the abhorrent silence and inaction of the international community. Mutab Musabbeh, Deir al-Balah City, the central area of Gaza Strip.
The Yemeni army says it's performed fresh anti-U.S. and anti-Israel operations as the Arab country remains a supporter of Palestine amid the genocide happening in the Gaza Strip.
In unwavering support of the oppressed Palestinian people and their mujahideen, and in response to the ongoing war of genocide in Gaza, the Yemeni armed forces carried out a drone strike on an Israeli military target in occupied Jaffa. With faith and determination, Yemen continues to resist American aggression, retaliating against attacks on civilians. In response, the Air Force launched drone strikes targeting enemy warships led by the U.S. aircraft carrier Truman in the northern Red Sea. Yemen's armed forces, standing resilient and defiant, reaffirm their commitment to supporting Palestine and confronting external aggression. Yemen will not surrender. It remains, as always, a graveyard for invaders. With steadfast faith, efforts continue to disrupt Israeli navigation in the Red and Arabian Seas and to resist oppression until Gaza is free from siege and aggression.
The number of people killed in the Tuesday U.S. air raid on Yemen's Hodeidah province has risen to 10. Five women and four children are among the victims of the attack on Al-Hawak district in the western Yemeni province. 16 suffered injuries in the assault, which targeted civilian homes and reduced residential areas to rubble. Washington started its air campaign against Yemen on March 15th after Sana'a resumed retaliatory attacks on Israel in response to the regime's renewed genocide in Gaza. A rally has been held here in Tehran in solidarity with Palestinians in Gaza and in condemnation of the renewed Israeli attacks on the besieged territory. Protesters took to the streets to slam Israel's breach of the ceasefire agreement with Hamas and the continued massacre of children. The protesters reaffirmed support for Gaza, waving Palestinian flags and holding pictures of assassinated resistance leaders. They chanted slogans condemning the U.S. for backing the ongoing genocide. Global pro-Palestine rallies have been ongoing since the Israeli genocide in Gaza began in early October 2023. The rallies have gained renewed momentum since March, when fresh attacks on Gaza violated a fragile ceasefire there.
That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
The whole world is silent towards oppression. Even one voice becomes powerful. IRIB English Radio, the voice of the voiceless. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. In the limelight.
The March 17th Israeli regime airstrike on Palestinians shivering in their tents in Gaza left 460 dead and another 620 injured. The Zionists then followed these other genocidal attacks on March 20, murdering another 70 Palestinians. Such attacks are continuing as this report is being compiled. They did not even bother to offer a pretext for their latest crimes against defenseless Palestinian civilians. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Please stay tuned for more. Crescent International wrote, in the first attack on March 17th, the Palestinians had woken up for Suhoor, the pre-dawn meal in preparation for fasting, when the bombs hit them. Many people had little or no food, especially the children who had gone to sleep on an empty stomach and were killed while starving. In their typical black humor, the Zionists might say the children were put out of their misery. For weeks, the Zionists have blockaded all food and medical deliveries to Gaza. This is in clear violation of the ceasefire agreement that went into effect on January 19th, as well as international humanitarian law, but the Zionists have violated it from day one. The Zionists carried these murderous attacks because they can, and because the United States supports them. Donald Trump has green-lighted the Zionist resumption of genocide of the Palestinians in Gaza. What accounts for Trump's subservience to the Zionists needs to be considered, but first let us continue with the Zionist regime's crimes. They have rightly evoked almost universal condemnation and loathing for their murderous policy. They are carrying out the strikes using U.S.-supplied warplanes and bombs. The few partially functioning hospitals in Gaza have been overwhelmed by the number of casualties. On March 21st, the Zionists bombed and destroyed the only cancer hospital, the Palestine Turkish Hospital in Gaza. With the exception of the United States, whose spokesperson said Washington had approved Israeli regime strikes, there was condemnation of the Zionist genocidal attacks from almost all quarters, even if some of these were quite hypocritical, such as the European Union. Doctors Without Borders expressed outrage at the latest bout of Israeli barbarism against defenseless Palestinian civilians. Claire Nicolet, MSF head of emergency, said in a statement posted on X, "We are appalled and outraged by these new unacceptable massacres of civilians. Far from showing any contrition, the indicted war criminal Benjamin Netanyahu said the assault will expand beyond airstrikes. He followed this up by sending Israeli occupation forces into northern Gaza and reoccupied Wadi Gaza, as known as Netzarim Corridor, that divides North Gaza from the south. The Zionist occupation forces had partially withdrawn from Wadi Gaza as part of the ceasefire agreement of January 15, 2025, that finally went into effect on January 19th. True to their duplicitous nature, the Zionists have constantly violated its terms. With the resumption of attacks on Gaza, killing innocent Palestinian women and children, and relaunching the ground invasion, the Zionists have once again proved that they do not abide by any agreement. They are habitual liars and serial killers." Humanitarian food deliveries to Gaza were blocked, again in clear violation of the first phase of the agreement, exacerbating an already critical food situation. This was followed by cutting off electricity to Gaza, whose infrastructure has been completely destroyed during 15 months of relentless Israeli regime bombings. The January agreement also stipulated that Israel will allow tents as temporary shelter for the traumatized people until the enclave is rebuilt. True to their non-compliance and duplicitous nature, they have allowed only a small number of tents into Gaza. The reconstruction of Gaza remains an elusive dream. The U.S. Zionist plan is to ethnically cleanse the tiny strip of its 2 million inhabitants so that Trump and his equally greedy son-in-law, Jared Kushner, can build their Riviera of the Middle East on the Gaza beachfront. For Netanyahu, an ethnically cleansed enclave will mean that illegal Zionist squatters can move in there and steal even this small patch of Palestinian land. Trump's demonic plan calls for pushing the Palestinians into Egypt and Jordan. Rulers in both countries have categorically rejected the idea. They seek the risk of an influx of such a large number of Palestinians, inspired by the Islamic spirit of resistance, into their countries. They fear the Palestinians might radicalize their already angry populations and overthrow these regimes. Trump has also floated other ideas, equally bizarre, about throwing the Palestinians out of Gaza and dumbing them in East Africa, Somalia, for instance, or even pushing them into Syria. There is, of course, a much simpler solution to this ongoing problem that erupted with the illegal intrusion of Zionist thieves and bandits from Europe and North America into Palestine. They should return to the countries from which they came: Poland, Romania, Ukraine, Hungary, Serbia, Russia, and North America, the United States and Canada. These racists and bigots do not belong in the Holy Land of Palestine that has been drenched in the blood of innocent Palestinian people since the arrival of these mass murderers in 1947 to 1948. Let us consider why Trump is so beholden to the pro-Israel lobby. It is not merely because Kushner is Jewish, or that his daughter Ivanka has also converted to Judaism. Religion has little relevance for Trump. He is driven by greed, a trait he shares with most Americans, and he is extremely narcissist. These, however, do not fully explain his subservience to the Zionists. There are several other possible reasons. First, Jewish donors to his election campaign are in the forefront. Miriam Adelson and her late husband, Sheldon Adelson, have contributed massive amounts for the specific purpose of getting Trump to fulfill their demands regarding Israel. Miriam Adelson's $100 million contribution to Trump's campaign was made on the condition that, if elected, the Orange Man will allow Israel's annexation of the illegally occupied West Bank. The Adelson's donations, actually bribes, made to Trump's campaign in 2016 were to get him to recognize Al-Quds as the capital of Israel and to relocate the U.S. embassy there. Trump complied. For their massive contributions to his campaign, Trump awarded Miriam Adelson a Presidential Medal of Freedom in December 2018. In fairness to the Adelsons, they have donated large sums to other right-wing politicians as well. Politicians they supported and had virtually in his pocket included George W. Bush, John McCain, Newt Gingrich, Mitt Romney, and even the certified crook Rudy Giuliani. Over the course of the 2020 election cycle alone, Adelson gave more than $420 million to conservative candidates and political groups. Greg Palast helpfully tells us in his 2016 book, America as the Best Democracy Money Can Buy, A Tale of Billionaires and Ballot Bandits. The other, more plausible explanation is that Trump had close ties to the pedophile and Mossad agent Jeffrey Epstein. It is widely believed that Epstein made videos of Trump having relationship with minors and gave these to Israeli intelligence for blackmail purposes. Habitual blackmailers, the Zionists, may have threatened to release these videos and ruin his presidency if he does not comply with their demands. Even in a sex-plagued society like the United States of America, certain details may prove embarrassing even for a dirty old orange man. The price is being paid by hapless Palestinians.
Ocean of Dua. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على محمد وآله الطاهرين. In the name of Allah, the most beneficent, the most merciful. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, and we're going to be with you in this edition of the program, The Ocean of Dua. In this edition, we will inshallah talk about the dua, the reality of supplication, its categories, and we will describe some of its effects. So stay with us. Dear listeners, as you have been previously with us, we were discussing the matter of supplication. We talked about its different constituents, and in its second constituent, which was the supplicant, him or herself, we talked about different characteristics which are actually needed for a supplication to be responded to. We talked about many, many characteristics: being sincere, being true, believing in God's power, believing that God is all-knowing, and all those things. But the last thing which was mentioned was that Allah should receive special manners by the supplicant. But in this program, we will start talking about one important issue, which is the status of the supplicants. Supplicants can be divided into many groups. By the stage they reach, by the level they reach, their categories would be designated. So the first stage is that a request includes only a specific desire. For instance, you may want to ask God for something to be given to you, properties, positions, or knowledge, or a car, I don't know, house, maybe anything. But a supplicant concentrates only on his special want and sees God as a means that achieves his objective. So, of course, this is an asset given by God, and it embraces a servant who has not referred to others to achieve his wishes, but who has turned towards God only.
Alhamdulillah, khaliq al-khalq, basit al-rizq, faliq al-asbah, dhil jalal wal-ikram, wal-fadl wal-in'am, alladhi ba'uda fala yura, wa qaruba fashahida an-najwa.
Imam Ali alayhi salam says in his prayers, Ilahi kullu makrubin ilayka yaltaji. O my Lord, every oppressed one resorts to you, and every distressed one looks forward to you. O my Lord, the worshippers hear of your great reward, so they submit to you, so they don't have anybody else to refer to. And also, Imam Hussain alayhi salam in Arafah supplication, he says, Allahumma ma akhafu fakfini. O Allah, relieve me from what I fear, wa ma ahdharu faqini. Oh, and save me from whatever I dread. وَفِي نَفْسِي وَدِينِي فَحَرُسْنِي. Protect my soul and religion. Dear listeners, you see, as we are moving on with this very discussion over supplication, we're giving you many examples, many traditions and narrations from our infallible imams, how they ask Almighty Allah for what they need. So it is really noteworthy and interesting how our infallible imam, in this case Imam Hussain alayhi salam, asks for something which he's sure that the only one able to do that is God Almighty. So in one point he refers to God saying, وَلَا تَكِلْنِي إِلَىٰ خَلْقِكَ. O my Lord, do not make me rely on your creatures. بَلْ تَفَرَّدْ بِحَاجَتِي. Be the only one. وَتَوَلَّ كِفَايَتِي. Who fulfill my needs. وَنَظُرْ إِلَيَّ وَنَظُرْ لِي فِي جَمِيعُ أُمُورِي. And suffice me with all I want, and look at me, and look after my affairs. So, you see, dear listeners, how Imam Hussain alayhi salam asks for something, knowing and believing the fact, and also referring to the facts and characteristics and epithets of the Almighty Allah.
And why do we call out to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala? Is it because God is not aware of our needs? God is Al-Alim. He knows all of our needs. Is it because God needs convincing? God is known as Al-Jawad. He is the source of generosity. Then why am I making dua to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala? The dua is a journey of realizations. When a person goes to the ocean and he takes with him a bucket that can carry 4 liters of water, the ocean is infinite. In as much as your vessel is large, that is the amount of water that the ocean will give you. And therefore, our goal is to expand our capacity. Rumi has a very beautiful poem. He says, "Har khujo mushkil javab onjo ravad." Wherever there is a problem, that is where the answer will come. Har khujo keshti ab onjo ravad. Wherever there is a vessel, that's where the water will come. Ab kamju tishnagi avar bedas. Don't go seeking for water. Instead, create the thirst within you. Ta beju shad ab az bala va as. So that the water may burst forth from above and from below you. Experience that realization that you need God, and the mercy of God will come towards you.
The ocean of dua.
In one other tradition, we read that one day Imam Sajjad alayhi salam was told in Mecca that his garden in Medina has been confiscated. They told him that Walid Abdul Malik, the Umayyad Caliph, had come from Damascus to Mecca to offer the Hajj, and he might have asked for his help. Imam Sajjad alayhi salam said, "Woe to you! Should I ask for help other than God in God's house?" He meant, while I'm staying in God's house and near to his house, or in general term, any place is God's house and I am the God's creation, how should I ask my needs from someone else? Inni anafu an as'ala ad-dunya khaliqaha. I even avoid asking the creator of the world for worldly desires. فَكَيْفَ أَسْأَلُهَا مَخْلُوقًا مِثْلِي. Then how shall I ask a creature like myself for that? So I do not ask God for a worldly affair because I know that He's able to give me many, many, many more than those things. So this was another example of how our infallible moms ask and pray to God. Thank you, dear listeners, for staying with us. Thank you for staying with us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also visit our website at parsetoday.com. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.
The limelight. NATO Secretary General Mark Rutte has given reassurances there are no plans for a sudden drawdown of American military forces from Europe. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. British newspaper The Financial Times has covered the story and tells us more. The United States has no plans for a sudden withdrawal from Europe's defense, NATO Secretary General Mark Rutte has emphasized, adding that any shift towards Asia would be coordinated with European allies. Mark Rutte's comments on Thursday, 3rd of April, come amid rising concern among European capitals about Washington's long-term commitment to the European continent's security. U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio told his European counterparts on Thursday, 3rd of April, that President Donald Trump supports NATO but wanted allies to commit to a realistic pathway for them to take on more responsibility for NATO's capabilities. Mark Rutte told reporters ahead of a meeting of alliance foreign ministers that there are no plans for them to all of a sudden draw down their presence here in Europe. But we know that for America, being the superpower they are, they have to attend to more theaters. Mark Rutte added, "We do everything in this alliance in the spirit of no surprises, of working together. If the Americans want to pivot more to Asia, obviously we will do that in a coordinated fashion." Donald Trump's move to restore ties with Moscow and his threats to withdraw U.S. protection for NATO allies who fail to spend more on defense have spooked European governments, who have responded by increasing military investments and discussing how they would mitigate the United States reducing its support for the European alliance. Marco Rubio said he wanted to hear allies commit to increasing defense spending drastically, with a new target of 5% of gross domestic product or GDP, up from 2% at present, to build up their military capabilities as Washington seeks to scale back its presence in Europe and refocus on other regions of the globe. U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio, standing next to NATO Secretary General Mark Rutte, said, "President Trump has made it clear we support NATO and we will remain in NATO. He's not against NATO. He's against a NATO that does not have the capabilities that it needs." Rubio added, "No one expects you will be able to do this in 1 year or two, but the pathway must be there. We do want to leave here with an understanding that we are on the pathway, a realistic pathway, to every single one of the members committed and fulfilling a promise to reach up to 5% of spending." He said, that includes the United States. The U.S. U.S. Secretary of State dismissed reports of a possible reduction in U.S. troops or military presence in Europe as hysteria and hyperbole, but said the content needed to change its spending priorities. Marco Rubio added, "This is a collection of advanced economies, rich countries who have the capability to do more." He also stressed that that would require a change from European governments after decades of building up vast social safety nets. Euronews has also covered the same story and tells us more. The U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio has reassured allies that Donald Trump is not anti-NATO and that the country will remain within the NATO alliance. But he's also asking his counterparts in Europe to make sacrifices and raise defense spending to 5% of GDP or gross domestic product. America's Secretary of State Marco Rubio has reassured NATO allies of U.S.'s commitment to the military transatlantic alliance at his first meeting of NATO foreign affairs ministers. Rubio recalled Donald Trump's message that the European countries and Canada need to further increase their defense spending. Rubio told reporters in Brussels, Belgium, the United States President Donald Trump made clear he supports NATO and we're going to remain in NATO. He also stressed that the U.S. wants the alliance to be stronger against any potential threats. He said the only way NATO can get stronger and more reliable is if our partners, the nation states that comprise this important alliance, have more capabilities. The top U.S. diplomat said he expects to leave Brussels with a clear commitment from allies to spend 5% of their gross domestic product, or GDP, on defense, an increase from the current 2% of the GDP, which some European countries such as Belgium, Italy, and Spain still fail to meet. Rubio said, "I understand there's domestic politics after decades of building up vast social safety net that maybe don't want to take away from and that invest more in national security. But a full-scale grand war in the heart of Europe is a reminder that hard power is still necessary as a deterrent." Marco Rubio's comments come after Donald Trump said last month that the U.S. would not defend its European allies unless they increase their burden sharing within the NATO alliance. "It's common sense, right?" Donald Trump told reporters in the Oval Office in early March. "If they don't pay, I'm not going to defend them." The transatlantic alliance is currently assessing its capability gaps before committing to a new defense spending target, but a final figure is not expected until the annual NATO summit in June at The Hague in Netherlands. NATO Secretary General Mark Rutte stressed that European NATO members have recently committed to the largest increase in defense spending since the end of the Second World War, though he agreed with the United States that much more needs to be done. The former Dutch Prime Minister and NATO Secretary General Mark Rutte said, "It's my assumption that what we need to spend, the Canadians and Europeans together, will be north of 3%. U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio stressed that raising defense spending to 5% of GDP cannot be done in 1 year or two. But the U.S. now demands a real way forward from its allies to build a stronger NATO capable of defending its territories. The NATO chief also warned that the global security threats facing the alliance are increasingly interconnected, and that the Russian threat will persist for many years to come. The NATO Secretary General Mark Rutte said, "We're seeing what China is doing. We're seeing how these two theaters, the Indo-Pacific and the Euro-Atlantic, are getting more and more connected, by the fact that the Russians are working together with the North Koreans and with the Chinese. So we have to look at all these theaters in conjunction, and that will be our focus. European NATO members are also expecting clear messages or a roadmap from U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio regarding the U.S. withdrawal of troops from Europe, where around 100,000 American soldiers are stationed. However, the U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio has not yet addressed the issue, and Mark Rutte indicated that no immediate drawdown of U.S. forces from Europe is planned. He said there are no plans for the U.S. military to all of a sudden withdraw from Europe, but we know that for America being the superpower, they have to attend to more theaters than one. Some NATO member states consider that the United States could reduce its presence by some 20,000 troops to 50,000 troops. NATO Secretary General Mark Rutte acknowledged that the U.S. has long sought to pivot its ascension towards the Indo-Pacific region, but assured that it will be done in a very coordinated manner. This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is iranradio.ir. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Thank you.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Iran's President Pezeshkian says Tehran will engage in nuclear talks with dignity and will defend its right to a peaceful nuclear program. Some 40 Palestinians are killed and more than 100 injured after Israeli warplanes bomb a residential neighborhood in Gaza's Shojaiya neighborhood. And the Yemeni army says it's performed fresh anti-U.S. and anti-Israel operations hours after shooting down another American unmanned aircraft. Hello, welcome to World News. This is a live broadcast from Tehran headquarters with me, Behrouz Najafi. Iran's president saying that his country is not seeking nuclear weapons, stressing that Tehran's nuclear program is solely focused on advancements in science and energy.
We do not seek to acquire nuclear weapons. Our enemies claim that Iran wants nuclear weapons, yet the leader of the Islamic Republic, who is the main policymaker in the country, has clearly and publicly stated that Iran has no intention of developing nuclear weapons. Despite this, our enemies continue to propagate this false narrative. Our peaceful nuclear program has been verified countless times, and we are not afraid of further verifications.